new to Parkway. If you saw them coming in the door, there are these little outlines. They help you stay with us if you care to use one. It's got a few fill-in-the-blanks and key points, etc. The failure to put things on can be costly. When Crystal and I were first dating, that was way, way back in our college days, we went on a camping trip with her family, the Finke family. I really didn't know how to camp Finke style. So I woke up the first morning and I said, so what are we going to do? Are we going to go fishing? Are we going to go swimming? What's the plan? Are we ready to go? And her dad said, well, I don't know. You know, we'll see. So for the next several hours, everyone sat around. You're not going to believe this. They sat around in lawn chairs. You know what they did? Nothing. They sat around in lawn chairs. I'm not very good at doing nothing. And this is going to shock those of you who know me well. I'm not very good at relaxing. It took me 3 full days to learn how to camp Finke style. I have a jackrabbit mentality, while many people have a sloth mentality. Truthfully, I would be far better off if I could learn the secret of slothing. And I know there are a few of you out here who could teach me. That's great. Nonetheless, as the camping trip continued, I was almost beside myself with excitement when I heard the words, let's go swimming. Now here's the thing, I don't even like swimming, but something is way better than nothing. So off we went. This was early afternoon. So after splashing around in the water for about 45 minutes, I laid down on my beach towel. A few minutes later, I was asleep. See there? I was learning how to do nothing. And sleep I did for about the next hour and a half to 2 hours. Just one problem. Being young and dumb, I had neglected to put on sunscreen. Oh, I tell you, therein I ended up with the worst sunburn I have ever had. It was so painful. I learned a lesson the hard way. The failure to put on can be costly. Now, not putting on sunscreen can be bad, but I'll tell you what's far worse. The failure to put on the whole armor of God. Whether you know it or not, you are engaged in a spiritual war. You have an enemy who hates you. You have an enemy who doesn't play fair, because to him, it's not a game. In spiritual warfare, the worst thing you can do is nothing. Let me paint a pretend scenario for you. Let's pretend that you knew that before the end of this day, someone, somewhere, was going to shoot you. And let's pretend that you had in your possession the best Kevlar body armor that's ever been made. Question, if you knew that someone was going to shoot you, would you put on your armor before leaving home? The answer is obvious. The answer is yes. So, why don't you put on the whole armor of God before you leave home? Now, perhaps you do. But my guess would be most believers don't. Thankfully, God has given us the armor we need. If you are in Christ, God has given you His armor, the best armor ever made to protect you. it would be foolish to leave home without it. So, what is this armor, and how do we put it on? Ephesians chapter 6, verse 11. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. How to get ready for battle. The first thing is this: proactively put on. The verb translated put on means to envelop in, to clothe with. It is God's intent that His armor be the daily, lifelong attire of every Christian. We are not to put it on only now and then when we have a crisis. We are to clothe ourselves in it. We are to wrap ourselves in it. We are to never discard it. Many Christians become careless about always putting on their armor. Many Christians become lazy, just flat lazy. And some Christians don't even believe the battle is real because of such neglect. In the moment of temptation or in the moment of attack, they find themselves completely unprepared. Once the enemy attacks, it's too late. Each piece of armor must be strapped on before the attack begins. We must put on the armor of God all the time. This ought to be the consistent pattern of our lives, so commonplace that it's like breathing. We don't have to think about breathing, generally speaking. We just do it all the time. Similarly, we should come to the place where we don't have to think about putting on the armor. We just do it all the time. But first, it has to become a habit through discipline. Never leave your armor hanging on the wall. Oliver Cromwell, a British general in the mid-1600s, ever deemed himself in danger. So, in camp, at court, at home, at all times, except when bathing, which he rarely did, he always wore a coat of mail under his clothing. Similarly, Julius Caesar never, ever took off his sword. He even slept with it. As believers, we must have the same mentality. God has far more power than Satan. And yet, victory in every skirmish is not automatic for believers. A believer's victory depends not only on God's power, but also on our faithful appropriation of God's power. God offers us His armor, but we still have to choose to put it on. God's assistance and man's resolve are wed. One commentator explained it this way: without God's power, man can do nothing. But if man will not put on God's armor, God will do nothing. So the first thing is proactively put on. The second thing, put on the whole armor. The phrase whole armor translates one Greek word, panoplia. This term combines pan, meaning all, and oplon, meaning weaponry. So, the panoplia, the whole armor, refers to a complete suit of armor. Paul's imagery drawn from Roman soldiers pictures the uniform which conquered and controlled the known world. Roman soldiers were everywhere in Paul's day. Having been in prison often, Paul had repeatedly seen their armor up close. Even as he formulated the words of this verse in a Roman jail, he may have been chained to a soldier who looked something like this. Or this. Come on up here, Soldier Gilder. I think his little sandal dealies make it a little tough on him. I'm hoping he doesn't go down. We don't want to have to pick him up. There you go. Perfect. Hold on a second. I like that. Okay. Now, this famous suit of armor, it's probably not exactly authentic, but it gives us a pretty good idea. It was not viewed as consisting of optional pieces. Each piece was fashioned in such a way as to be required as part of the whole. Strengths and weaknesses of each piece counterbalanced strengths and weaknesses of all the other pieces. A complete Roman panoplia was made up of pieces which perfected the whole. Every piece was necessary. To leave off any part of the armor at any given time was foolhardy. A lack of only one piece of armor left a huge opening for the enemy. No helmet left the head in danger. No breastplate left the vital organs exposed. No sword would have been so silly the enemy would have left. The same could be said for each and every piece of the armor. Because their lives were on the line, Roman soldiers never entered battle without putting on the whole set of armor, the panoplia. Similarly, Christians must continually prepare for battle. Can I tell you a secret? Satan never takes a day off attacking you. He never takes a day off tempting you to sin. So we, followers of Christ, must continually, every single day, put on the armor of God. Wise Christians never enter battle without putting on the whole set. Fellow believers, I implore you, leave nothing naked. Leave nothing exposed to the enemy. Now listen, in the context of spiritual gifts, we focus on our strengths. But in the context of spiritual warfare, we focus mostly on our weaknesses. The president of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary said this: "How far you go in life is ultimately determined not by your greatest strength, but by your greatest weakness." Thank you, Soldier Gilder. Great job. In Greek mythology, Achilles was a hero of the Trojan War, the greatest of all Greek warriors. According to legend, Achilles was invulnerable in all of his body except for his heel, because when his mother dipped him in the magical waters of the Styx River as an infant, she held him by his heel. And again, according to legend, his opponent Paris learned of his vulnerability and killed him by shooting him in the heel with a poison arrow. Question: have you ever heard anyone use the term Achilles' arm or Achilles' leg? I would say no. The reference is always to Achilles' heel, referring to a weak spot. Listen carefully. You and I, each one of us, have weak spots. For some, it's sexual sin. For some, it's addictions. For some, your academic brilliance is your Achilles heel. Some people are too smart for their own good. For others, it's arrogance and pride. For still others, it's laziness. Their lack of discipline kills them. All too often, your Achilles heel ends up defining your life. All too often, believers think that their strengths will carry them through any fray. Many people exaggerate their strengths and downplay their weaknesses. Do not be deceived. Your enemy knows your weaknesses. If you don't put on your armor, he will find the unprotected area of your life and he will attack. So listen. Listen. A fortress may be 99% secure, but if one small gate is left unattended, the entire fortress will fall. That is a picture of our lives. So let me just ask, where is your weakness? Where is your weakness? Do you know it? Is it inconsistent church attendance? Laziness in daily prayer and Bible time? Too selfish to use your spiritual gifts to bless others? Holding a grudge against someone who hurt you? Greed and selfishness with material things? Struggles with outbursts of anger? A lack of discipline? I implore you, put on the whole armor of God. Let's talk a little more about weaknesses. Are your eyes your weaknesses? Satan will accommodate you by placing all manner of profane images before your eyes. Are you careless with your lips? Satan will give you every opportunity to employ foul language and to gossip throughout the day. If you never get drunk, but you can't control your temper will be your downfall. If sexual lust is not a big issue for you, but talking bad about people behind their back is, your mouth will be your downfall. If using profanity is not a problem for you, but sinful arrogance is, your pride will destroy you. Do you see how this works? In fighting our enemy, we must use everything that God gives us for life and godliness. We must use all that he gives us. If there be even a tiny chink in your armor, the devil will find it and he will seek to exploit it. However small the chink in your armor may seem to you, Satan salivates upon finding your Achilles heel, knowing that he's about to hit you hard wherever it will hurt you the most. Do you get the idea that this battle is personal? You know why? It's because it is. So let me ask you again a question. Do you put on the whole armor of God? Do you even know what that means? To not put on the whole armor is very dangerous. The French once entered a battle having thought of everything almost. They forgot to put on any armor on their horses. They lost the battle due to a shower of English arrows which so galled the horses that they went berserk, trampling their own men. Now listen. One fatal omission led to disaster. One. Christian friend, find the hole in your own spiritual dike and stop the trickle. If you don't, Satan will turn it into a flood. How to prepare for battle. A third thing. Put on God's armor, not your armor. In any warfare, one must wear the right armor. Preparing to face Goliath, David, the boy, put on Saul's armor, but said, "I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them." Matter of fact, Saul's armor was way too big. Fortunately, we believers have superb armor, which is tried and true. While it's true that we are weak, for our war against evil, the Lord has opened his armory and brought out the weapons of his wrath. Please say this verse aloud with me. Ready? The Lord opened his armory and brought out the weapons of his wrath. One more time. The Lord opened his armory and brought out the weapons of his wrath. Now that is a good word. Doesn't that encourage you? Doesn't that give you hope? Though the Lord does not insulate us from battle, he does take upon himself the responsibility to equip us for battle. God has given us what we need. The only question is, will we be diligent and faithful to use it? In earthly armies, a leader flies, as it were, on the wings of his soldiers. But in God's army, the opposite is true. In God's army, all strength lies in the leader. We soldiers cannot attack without him, nor can we defend ourselves without his armor. Our only hope is to put on the whole armor of God. Our own armor is not sufficient. Only God's armor can protect us in the midst of spiritual warfare. Cast away as worthless any other armor that you have trusted in the past. Your own intellect, not sufficient. Your winsome personality, not sufficient. Your own ability to figure things out, not sufficient. Your religiosity, definitely not sufficient. Those things will always fail us. Only the armor of God is reliable. Vulcan, the god of fire in Roman mythology, was the blacksmith and metalworker who forged the armor of the gods, supposedly, including the scepter of Jupiter and the arrows of Apollo and Diana. People of Paul's day believed that their noblest war heroes wore armor made for them by Vulcan. That was fable, of course. But the armor of God, the spiritual armor of God bestowed upon us, is reality. God gives us ample provision for every type of attack we will ever face. The armor we wear is not only made by God, but listen to this, it's also worn by God. We serve as enlisted soldiers under a heavenly warrior. Isaiah 59:17 pictures God as putting on armor. displeased at injustice, God put on righteousness as his body armor and placed the helmet of salvation on his head. He clothed himself with the robe of vengeance and wrapped himself in a cloak of divine passion. Being human, I think it helps us to conceptualize God in human roles such as shepherd, priest, king, and father. Now, add warrior to this wonderful list. God is not soft. God is the ultimate armor-clad warrior who leads us into battle. God does not ask us to fight battles that he avoids. When we are in the fray of battle, he is with us to fight battles at our side and to rescue us. As you fight, realize that God fights too, and he is with you. As you picture God in his armor, know that what he, the greatest warrior, wears, he also offers to you. That's good. How to prepare for battle. A fourth thing. Stand firm. We read in verse 11 that you may be able to stand. The phrase "may be able" implies that the results believers seek are neither easy nor automatic. We must think of ourselves as constantly under attack. Most of us don't have to think too far to figure that out. The Christian life is no place for cowards or weaklings or the faint-hearted. Being saved enlists us into the ultimate war of the ages. We are saved to fight. Every step of our spiritual journey will be contested. There are no picnic areas on this journey. Satan does not want you to experience joy or peace. Satan does not want you to possess the gifts that God has given you. Satan does not want you to be an effective soldier in God's army. I hate the fact that some preachers have taught a false salvation. One that says, oh, just come to Jesus and all of your problems will be solved. In fact, you can live your best life now. Yeah, that's literally heresy. It's heresy. You will only live your best life when you are face to face with Jesus in heaven. That's when your best life begins. The truth is, the here and now is hard. Always has been, is, and always will be hard. Stand. The key word of this third and final section of Ephesians is a military term which, in soldier talk, means stand firm under attack. It refers to standing your ground, to holding your position while under assault. In a critical moment, at the Battle of Waterloo, everything depended on one besieged English brigade. Couriers rushed to tell the Duke of Wellington of the brigade's desperate plight. They were being overrun. His response, stand firm. As the brigade's distress worsened, an officer appealed, and again he heard the words, stand firm. But then the officer cried out, but sir, we shall all perish. The Duke, knowing the brigade's critical position, repeated a third time, stand firm. Every man, in that doomed brigade fell. Every single one of them stood firm to the end. That, my dear friends, is what it means to stand firm. And that, Christian soldiers, is the call of God on each of our lives, come what may. In Christ, stand firm. That is the call of God for each of our lives. Now, to analyze how we Christians are to stand firm in spiritual warfare, we will answer this question with three easy-to-remember headings. You ready? No fright, no flight, just fight. Shall I explain what these terms mean? I will, Lord willing, starting next Sunday. I really hope you'll be here. I really hope you'll invite someone to come with you. I'd like to lead us now as we conclude in a